Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to a Sniffer Nixon production. Welcome to Are You Feeling Funny, where top comedians discuss health and well-being with Harley Street specialist and our host, Dr. Brian Kaplan. Today's guest is Milton Jones, so let's join them in the heart of Harley Street.
Welcome to Are You Feeling Funny, Milton Jones.
Thank you very much, nice to be here.
Great, so this is how this works, is I'm an old-fashioned holistic doctor, so I like to look at things in terms of body, mind and spirit. So I'm going to invite you to talk about any experiences that you've had as a patient or in any connection with doctors at a physical level and then psychological, and then we'll talk about spiritual matters.
Okay.
So first of all, physical. Did you have any experiences that we can talk about where something funny happened, perhaps in the physical world? This can be A&E, it can be accidents, It can be illness, anything.
Well, I've been very lucky. In my life, I haven't had much wrong with me at all. I've never spent a night in a hospital, never had a bone broken.
Good.
The worst thing that happened to me was I had measles when I was 6, and it developed into encephalitis.
Yes.
And which is quite serious. It's the swelling of the brain, I think, isn't
yes.
it? And it was touch and go for a while. So that's as near as I've got. Other than that, the second one down is verrucas, really.
Let's stay with the measles first of all. Yes, that is extremely serious, and that is why there is this national campaign to have people vaccinated against measles, because there is a percentage, and although it might be 1 in 10,000 or something like that of people who have measles that go on to some form of complication, it is serious. And then the next step that we would get more serious than that is terrible.
Yes.
So that's quite a serious situation you were in there.
Yes, and I can still smell the smell as well. Often diseases or serious things come with a smell.
Yeah.
You can sort of go back to it. And occasionally I catch a whiff in a school dining room or something of a similar smell. I go, I'm back 6 years old. And also whenever I see an Action Man, it was over Christmas and I got an Action Man that Christmas, I suddenly feel ill, strangely.
And do you think it's the smell of the illness or the smell of the doctors or the hospital?
No, I wasn't even in hospital. They kept me at home. It got quite serious at home quite quickly. And I was in bed, and it was just the smell that was up my nose for 3 weeks.
That's really interesting, because, you know, they have trained dogs to be able to diagnose prostate cancer. They can actually smell sometimes that if the person has the cancer, the prostate cancer or not.
Yes, and in fact, my wife's uncle is involved with all that. He's a doctor, and he runs a charity, and I did a gig for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I was talking to one of the people who run it, and I said, isn't it a bit awkward, you know, if you've trained these dogs and they turn around and start sniffing you and tell you that you've got cancer? And she said, yeah, that's what happened to me.
It happened.
It happened, yes. The dog turned round on her and started sniffing strangely, and she had to go to hospital.
And the dog pre-diagnosed all the specialists and everything. Yeah.
Yes, well, I mean, you don't want a dog with a vengeful streak, otherwise it could go around. Yeah. But it's amazing what they can smell, you know, and what else could they do?
Well, I go to a psychotherapy supervision group, you know, because I do a type of therapy called provocative therapy. And if you do therapy, you need to have supervision, people that supervise you, and you can do it in a group. And the main facilitator of my group has a dog in the room, and he reckons that the dog sometimes barks at crucial moments when stories are being told. I think he notices when they're crucial and he doesn't notice when they're non-crucial.
Yes, I've had hecklers like that for sure.
So I made some line about diagnosis and dognosis.
Absolutely. Trying to think what else. Yeah, so luckily I haven't had much else wrong with. My father is actually a medical physicist.
Physicist. Yes, so radiotherapy and stuff like
all
that.
He was head of physics at Royal Marsden in Fulham Road. And eventually, before he died, he got bowel cancer. And he was actually in the ward he designed.
Ah.
And it, there was strange sort of irony, coincidence sort of feeling. But my earliest recollection of hospital and illness and stuff is of being taken around the Marsden and seeing a lot of very ill people.
Yes.
And it actually freaked me out because I was only little and, you know, again, the smell of the disinfectant and that kind of thing. And there were always lots of x-rays at home and there wasn't much chance of me smoking, I tell you.
Yeah.
So I've been, you know, I come from a medical-ish background, even though I have no aspiration.
You never had a thought of going into
No,
this,
it was
no,
totally yeah. impractical in terms of my exam results. And, no, I'd never had an interest in that. And I'm very clumsy by nature, so that wouldn't be a good start.
And did anyone else go into, and your brother or sister? Or
no, I only have one brother, and he's a travel marketing consultant, so no, big failure all round on that front.
Okay, so let's get on to the Barukas you were going to
talk
about.
Yeah, I had hundreds
about.
Of
yes.
them.
Yes.
And they don't just go on feet.
Yes.
They'll go anywhere. And I don't think anyone's really understood them. I know they've got bazooka Baruka things now, but I had to get them cut out with a syringe.
Yes. I do know something about them. You see, it's almost as if medicine doesn't want to spend too much time on something that is harmless. You see, it's harmless, but it's not harmless from a psychological effect if you've got it. Or it can hurt your feet if it's,
sure,
it's underneath
yes.
your feet. Yeah,
and you don't see little old ladies collecting on behalf of Baruka Tuffle on the street. It's not really a thing, is
it? No, Baruka charities.
No, not yet.
So what did you... Did you have them cauterized out?
We tried to... Was it formaldehyde, I think, was one of the things?
They used a chemical, not a scalpel as such.
Chemical, and then that didn't work, so then they went on to... And then I was hobbling around. I didn't go. It's like when I had the measles, I thought I was really good at maths beforehand. And afterwards, I wasn't, after having the brain swelling. And then with Roo, because I was really good at swimming beforehand, I missed 2 years and I wasn't good at swimming after that.
I mean, you might have, that's a punishment because you might have picked up the Verrucas in the swimming changing room. But Verrucas are really interesting, the different ways you can treat them. And because there's a whole lot of home remedies and orthodox remedies.
Yep.
Salicylic acid, which is the stuff that aspirin's made of, in an intense salicylic acid. Even one of the home remedies I read up said, take the aspirin and make it yourself and make a paste and put it on. So that's one of the treatments and filing it away. Apple cider vinegar's been used. There are other chemicals. They can use cold. They can use cryotherapy sort of freeze them out. Yeah. All that's been used, and so there's a whole study of these things of how they do, but not intensive. It's as if it's a benign condition, and they say they'll all go in 2 years.
Right.
If you're prepared to wait two years. Then most of them go. So they are strange immunological
phenomenon. Is it fungus?
It could be a virus of a type, and it grows and it lives there. And but here's the one that I only found out quite recently: the duct tape treatment.
Really?
So you put a bit of duct tape on it, and apparently that suffocates it from getting air from the atmosphere, and it can treat the verruca.
How long do you have to leave it on for?
Can be a few weeks. So, so you have to walk around there. Maybe they should make skin-coloured duct tape.
I've still got scars on my feet, though.
Where they cut it out, it can leave a hole in your feet and then it's gone. But if you leave it there, you can feel yourself walking on it.
Yes,
it's such a nice experience.
So apart from that, I think my skin has always been my Achilles heel, if that's not mixing metaphors, in terms of like spots or sort of rashes or verrucas. My skin always gives asylum to anyone, any skin disease. So... for some reason, I don't know why.
Well, a lot of, you know, in natural therapy, people believe that, some natural therapists believe that the skin is the least important organ because it's like a superficial disease, outside.
Sure.
And it's giving you indication of what's going on outside. And some of them don't like skin disease being pushed back, as it were, because they're giving us some indication of what's going on. I feel that can be a bit too religious in thinking in that terms, but because you need to sometimes control an eczema with skin disease with orthodox treatment sometimes.
Yeah,
but it can read the skin. For example, skin could come out in urticaria when someone's extremely anxious or shocked and allergic responses. So, what other skin adventures did you have?
Let's think. Just mystery rashes. And what else? Verrucas, yellow toenails.
Oh, yes, yes. That's also a virus can destroy your toenails. Or fungus, more likely.
As sounds like I should wash more, basically. Isn't it? it's all gone wrong. Not much else. Apart from twisting the odd ankle at football or something self-inflicted.
I think you had the really serious scare when you were too young to realize it was serious, actually.
Yeah.
One more step beyond that, and if that encephalitis doesn't work out, and remember, there's no treatment for it. If you've got a meningitis or an encephalitis that's due to a streptococcus, it's going to be wiped out by penicillin. But measles,
right?
There wasn't at your time any antiviral treatment. They were just sitting there and praying, really, that it would go in the right direction.
No,
really.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That
would have been the main thing to do at that moment with that encephalitis. Yeah. Measles encephalitis is no joke.
No.
So that's one long in your far. You weren't traumatized by it because you...
No, I missed how to do long division at school. that was a good thing or a bad thing.
It's funny you can remember something like that, eh?
Yeah,
it was a key lesson and then to sort of
I never understood it. I never understood it after that. There's a gap.
See, you would have become a doctor.
Who knows? Who knows? Absolutely. Literally, apart from that, skin things, nothing.
Okay, and would you ever have any contact with doctors, even if it wasn't you, the patient, or any A&E stuff, or someone else having a problem or anything like that?
Well, obviously, there was my father, who was
a
doctor.
Yes, you gave it.
Wasn't a medical doctor. He was a, scientific doctor, as it were. So a lot of relatives actually are.
He's a medical scientist at Royal Marsden and being in the physics area.
Yes. So radiotherapy and not so much chemotherapy.
No, radiotherapy is physics. Chemo is going into chemistry more.
Linear accelerators, I remember that being a thing. Yes. And also when that, do you remember years ago there was a Bulgarian scientist who had something a Bulgarian defector had something injected into him.
Yes.
Then my dad was asked about that.
Was that with the famous umbrella case?
Yeah, that's the one, yeah. Yes. Straight out. Well, it's slightly unbelievable almost, but it was true, apparently. Yeah. Injected as a source of radiation into the guy they wanted rid of. I mean, it's all back in fashion now, but...
Yeah, he would have been much in demand with this recent poisoning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But he's gone. He died 2 years ago, so... Yes. And lots of my wife's relatives are doctors as well. For some reason, I don't know why, just that kind of family.
Hi there, sorry. I know I'm definitely not as interesting, but just 2 seconds of your time. We're the company that make this show, Snipper Nixon. We do podcasts, we develop scripts, and much more. If you want to know more about us, find us at snippernixon.com. Oh, and if you are enjoying the show, please comment, tell a friend, subscribe, or send a carrier pigeon. We'll be back after these messages.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Now, straight back to Harley Street with Dr. Brian Kaplan and Milton Jones.
Okay, let's talk about psychological medicine. So we're going from body to mind now. Have you had any contact with any form of therapy, analysis, coaching, motivational, NLP, anything of these?
I've had a bit of therapy. I've done lots of jokes about therapy.
Yes,
that's
yeah,
not the
yeah,
same
yeah.
thing.
No, we don't mind hearing those.
No,
yeah.
Okay. It usually ended up with, well, how do you feel about it? You know, that usually is the rough, you know, roughly the punchline. But I've had a bit of therapy, and necessarily it's often about holding up a mirror, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So that you can see yourself from the questions and from not people's reaction, but the kind of hear yourself speak out loud certain things, and then the person show it back to you.
Yes, hear yourself articulate what is going on in your inner world rather than just the outside.
And what was good for me during the therapy thing was that because I was seeing this person every Friday, as it were, every Thursday night, I go, I've got nothing to talk about. I've got nothing to... I'll mention this. And the hour would go so quickly because I'd have... It was like a deadline for my homework.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to bring all this stuff up. Mm-hmm. And then I'd think, oh, this is self-indulgent nonsense. And then actually feeling a lot lighter as I walked out.
You lost the self... consciousness about it and just relaxed into the process. Yes,
yes, pretty much. And I think, because also my background is quite middle-class English, stiff upper lip, it sort of feels like an unnecessary indulgence.
Mm.
And to actually, because when I went in, I said I felt like someone carrying a rucksack. And if I didn't take it off, I was going to fall over. But as gradually I unpacked the rucksack...
It's like, or the monkey on your shoulder
you're
carrying around with
or
you.
Or a monkey in a rucksack. A gorilla in a rucksack. So so that's been positive.
A lot of therapy happens in everyday life where people are talking to... You know, the conversations that happen in psychotherapy are not the only psychotherapeutic conversations that happen.
Yeah.
And my view was... In every other psychotherapeutic type of conversation, laughter and jokes would come into it. If we could take a helicopter and listen to people having these conversations, be invisible and listen to in on pubs and tea rooms, we would hear people making each other laugh or laughing together in these therapeutic conversations.
True. And I'm trying to think. Yes, yeah, so the traditional view of a psychiatrist or someone doing therapy is humorlessness.
Mm.
Isn't it? It is straight face, and any jokes that you do won't be understood or won't... I mean, but the thing about comedy, though, you must find that people either really like it or really you don't hit it off with them, because some audience, you know, in comedy terms, you know, if you're talking about a big audience, I always look out and some people are really into it.
Mm.
And there's still someone with their arms folded just
them.
Staring at me. And I think that's one of the things about experience is you begin learn to look at the people laughing rather than the people who are not laughing because, well, especially if you were at the Cardiff Retail Awards 2 years ago. Just before I went on, they said, you know they don't speak English, yeah? Great. No, but that being a comedian, I think... Big part of it is learning to live with the fact that people won't like what you do.
Mm, mm.
And some people will, otherwise you won't get work. But knowing at some point in the next year I'll suffer some kind of death.
Mm.
And learning to live with that.
It's a strange thing. It works in lectures as well. You know, I gave a lecture on holistic medicine to a company that where the people retired, and they loved it year after year. And I must have given it 100 times at once. I went in there and I knew from the first second I wasn't going to get through to this crowd, from their body language, arms, and I just felt there was a group feeling that wasn't going to be kind to anyone who stood up in front of them on that day. Yeah.
Yes, it's a weird thing. And even having done a tour show over 100 times, I can almost tell from the conversation bubbling before the show if it's going to be hard or easy, because there's something in the atmosphere. Mm. People are laughing out loud already, or... It's just very subdued, you know, this was without even looking at them.
Do you think you're quite porous in what you pick up from atmospheres? Was you describing the smell and this feeling, this visceral kind of aesthetic feeling? Do you pick up a lot of stuff around you?
I think so,
vibes,
and I've got better at doing it over the years, because obviously you do your 10,000 hours or whatever it is, and you know,
mm-hmm.
And you measure in all the factors, and... It's almost like having been hit with a big stick so many times, you begin to anticipate the trajectory, you know, and that is the audience and their reaction. And therefore, you have various strategies to deal with it. You know, if they're very passive, you go in hard. If they've got lots of energy, then you don't have to do much. I mean, these are generalizations.
That's really interesting,
But you've learned to do that instinctively over the years. And I think it applies to small groups as well. Comedy is one of the few things that it's the Venn diagram overlaps with social skills as well.
Mm-hmm.
In that I think you get better at reading rooms or even people sometimes, not always. The danger is, though, that it becomes all about you, I think. I mean, and it's...
And you and your feelings and reactions to the outside world.
Yes, and, I mean, we're all in danger of it, but we've all met the big star who's become detached from reality to some degree because they have an entourage around them just saying yes.
Mm-hmm.
And that becomes... it's very easy to say... That's a bad thing. But when it begins to happen to people you know closely or even yourself to a lesser degree, perhaps, you can't see it.
Do you think it creates a certain type of loneliness when you treat it
for
like
sure,
that?
Because people don't know, well, you don't know why people want to know you anymore. And that's why long-standing friends are more precious.
It's what I try to say to women. Every woman wants to be beautiful, but what they don't understand is that there's such a thing as a beauty barrier, that people only see the beauty of a very beautiful woman. They don't see the person. Then they start, I don't feel appreciated for who I really am.
Yes. And then there's, well, I'm not an expert on this, but then perhaps when their beauty begins to fade, then they have an opportunity, but they've actually learnt to rely on the beauty.
Too late.
Yeah. And there's a big, you know.
So I noticed you mentioned the 10,000 hours. I'm referring to what Malcolm Gladwell, that you need to put in the 10,000 hours to be a professional. It was one of the things he said. I think it was 10,000 hours. And the other one he said is that you are fortunate if you grew up when you went to school, if you were in the older people in the class rather than the younger people in the class. Yep. That's fortunate. That's also a mark of success. Okay, let's move on to spiritual matters.
Yep.
And I do know the answer to this question in your case, but I'm going to ask it anyway because I've asked every comedian. Do you believe in God?
Yes, I do.
Tell
me
about it.
If today I'd changed, but no. I need to declare an interest in that my parents were Christian. I was brought up in... church-going household.
Yes.
So, you know, you could argue that perhaps I've been brainwashed to some degree or nurtured to the wire. But, you know, in some ways it would quite help me to rebel and become not the opposite, but to make my own brand of religion that I followed. And maybe I have to some extent. But basically, I am a Christian because, working inwards, I look around the universe and there's clearly something going on that's bigger than we are. That's the, you know, that we don't understand yet. Science doesn't understand it. Mm-hmm. If religious people are honest, they don't really understand it either, but there's something bigger that is out of our control. Secondly, the story, the line, the truth of God being disconnected from man, but there's a way back. If man believes in what Jesus has done to bring us together and says sorry for that, that resonates with me, that whole story. That I don't quite understand because it's not science, but there's something in it. I know there is. And more importantly, on the inside, the third thing is that I believe it works, both personally, since I've committed to it, I feel the power of something stronger and better than me inside.
Again, this porous feeling, right? That is a visceral kind of aesthetic experience you mentioned. Do you think this is what faith is? That one cannot necessarily articulate and present it logically and rationally to convince someone like Richard Dawkins or something like that, but nevertheless is felt so strongly that it has to be given a name. And that name is faith. I have faith that this is the case.
Yes, and I think the way we think, the way we are educated is so logic and science based that it's sometimes difficult for people to see outside that. But if you go to any real tribe anywhere else, it's not even up for grabs whether God exists or not. You know, there is something bigger out there.
That's what I experienced in India. It was just everywhere, you know, and I just felt it, and it wasn't, that was the norm.
Yes.
Just the way, that's how people were.
And also, not just for me personally, but when I see, say, the hardest situation ever, say, I don't know, a parent who's lost a child as a result of a stabbing or one of those things, and they forgive the person who did it. There's something so profound in that that I think is at the centre of everything. You go, yeah, that's what the whole world needs, something in that. But that is the kernel of the Christian message, forgiveness to those who want it.
Well, there is a, I'm very touched that you mentioned that, because I think that forgiveness is a very powerful process that one does essentially for one's own self, spiritual self, even more than the other person.
Sure.
It's as if you were, we talked about the monkey you were carrying around, monkey in the haversack.
Mm.
To me, forgiveness, there's an element of forgiveness that you can take off the haversack that you were thinking about and carrying around.
Yes. I also think it's a process as well. It's not just, I'll do it now.
Mm.
Because there are always going to be little memories or little things that are going to come back, and you go, I have to take it off again. You know, maybe it's an inner, you know, it's a smaller rucksack.
Yeah, there's a book that talks about this a lot called A Course in Miracles. I don't know if you've come across this. It's quite Christian, but it's very psychological in many respects. And the idea is that it combines the Christian or the religious idea of forgiveness with the idea of Freudian projection. So we'd say when we hate something about another person, it's because we often have projected something we don't like about ourselves onto them.
Yes.
But we can't easily forgive ourselves. We can't do that.
Yeah.
But so the idea of a theme that emerges is that can we learn to forgive what we see in others? And then that way we forgive ourselves. We release something in ourselves.
Yes, yes.
And to do it automatically and immediately is the idea of this. How can we forgive automatically and immediately? Not so easy. As you said, it can be a process.
Yes, interesting. I mean, the only caveat I'd like to add to what I've said about faith is that I have a visceral hatred of hypocritical religion in terms of rules for the sake of rules. And that exists across all religions, you know. And in a way, I think maybe God is more concerned about those who are open rather than those who are closed in general.
Well, it becomes fossilized, eh? The people want to write things down and make rules. It's always the religious leaders that start saying things themselves. And
I think mankind's instinct is to control people, to control others so that they benefit you. But religion is, Christianity is supposed to be free and looking up rather than sideways.
And do you like the congregational aspect? Do you go to a church or love meet people?
I do go
like
to a church, but I think the basis of, I think it is a team game.
Mm-hmm.
To come back to another sporting analogy, because we are inevitably good at one or two things. And what there is to do in the world is a team game, and we can only really operate together. Also, I can really kid myself that I'm fit going down the gym on my own. But suddenly when I get to play in a team, you go, whoa, I'm way off the pace. And that's sort of true of religion too. And also there are a lot of fat blokes who wear Man United kits who are not in the team at all. And they're just people who shout and complain.
Do you ever think that the feeling there is greater than the sum of the individual feeling? It's sort of... There's this phrase, and I think it's a Christian, I think it's Matthew, I think it, whenever two or more of you are gathered in my name, in other words, whenever two or more of you are gathered in my name, there's an amplification of this interconnection.
No, for sure. And in terms of people being good at different things, you know, some are good at teaching and some are good at looking after pastoral things, looking after people. That only begins to work in a team because, you know, it's like... If you turn up at a meeting, everyone has a different piece of the jigsaw. And it's only then that you can see the whole picture.
I'm a very big supporter of the Church of England, even though I'm Jewish. I do love all those buildings. And I think They're meant to have people in them and relating, and look at all these beautiful buildings and hardly anyone in them anymore.
But then sometimes those buildings become more important.
Yes.
How often do you see a big plastic thermometer outside one of those church buildings with a fun to put the roof, put the roof back on? And that's their main aim, is to put the roof back on rather than to help the community around them.
Like that, yeah.
And so it's all about the people that are on the inside.
Yes.
Also, I sort of jokingly once said that I think every church should have a height restriction,
mm-hmm.
and the height should be about 3'6", so that everyone has to go in on their knees.
Yes.
Because there can be a look at me
well,
attitude.
Now we see a nice connection between your comedy and your spiritual outlook.
Yes.
Everyone crawls.
Well, quite often I'm asked to not speak, but do a bit of comedy in a church situation.
Oh, yes.
But I say, no, you come and see me in a normal theatre, because that's not my job. I don't have a mandate to talk religion.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, do you think there is an element, there's a place for comedy amongst the people that talk in the, even though it may not be you, do you think there's a place for comedy in the preaching or at the pulpit?
Yes, comedy. Yes, sort of, although their aim is entirely different. My job is to make people laugh.
Mm.
Their job, hopefully, is to bring people closer to God. Now, if you can do both, then fine. But quite often, I think what happens is they start with a funny anecdote that has got nothing to do with what they're about to say.
Grafted on.
And basically, and now you can feel everyone's sigh as thing, and now the boring bit afterwards. But I think it's good if you can combine the two.
In Judaism, you know, that people do want the rabbi to be more like Jackie Mason, if possible.
If you can
make us laugh, it might be worth going, mainly because that's the only thing they understand. Because that's given in English, and the rest's in Hebrew. Most of them can't understand anything else.
Yes. You know? Well, there was an interesting series of Frank Skinner talked to the then, I think it was Rowan Williams, the Archbishop of Canterbury,
mm-hmm.
and they had a dialogue of things. But one of the things that came out of it is, why don't priests or vicars or whatever have 20 minutes like comedians,
mm-hmm.
and all go around different churches doing, you know, like a comedy circuit, but a church circuit.
Yeah, should be.
And they could get really good at that 20 minutes like comedians do, instead of having to produce this every week.
Mm.
Why should it be any good? We couldn't put together 20 minutes every week.
That amount of material.
Yeah, that's a heck of a lot of material. So get good at what, you know, I mean, there's an argument to be said that all comedians only have 20 minutes, you know, even though they might go on for longer. But
you know, the absurdity that comes out in your comedy, I mean, I was watching a long thing that I think is on YouTube. It's about an hour with the shirts and the blue background. And you can leave a person in a very interesting state to sort of give a really absurd explanation of history. And it's interesting how you think. Mm. And then you move on immediately to something else, leaving this, oh my God, look at that. Does he really think? He cannot believe that this absurd. Do you think that the way that people behave is a little bit absurd?
Well, I've always been fascinated by words and language and ideas. I wouldn't say I love it. I've just been fascinated that certain words mean certain things, and especially phrases, you know, that people pick up. So I think ever since I heard my dad say ectray, and I repeated it in conversation, ectray. I only later found out he was saying the word actually. But he's saying it in such a posh way that it became another word. And from moments like that in my past, you know, that I've become very interested in language and how it works. I mean, the reason I move on to other things so quickly is possibly the idea doesn't, you know, merit much thinking about. You know,
but it's funny. You think, oh, for a moment, you believe that Milton Jones actually believes that.
Yes.
I found because of the rhythm. I mean, Stephen Wright is a bit like you, that he has those sort of, but you have a sort of narrative rhythm that found my disbelief being suspended, actually, while I'm listening to this.
That's good. Thank you. I mean, I think if comedy works, and a style of comedy works, it's because you manage to draw people into your world.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me ages to work out that 50% is having funny things to say. The other 51% is creating an atmosphere where people will laugh.
Mm.
And that's much harder. Anyone can repeat some funny words, but the guys who can create a world you want to be part of, they're the ones with the gift, really.
Mm.
The selling of the comedy.
Mm.
You know, Tommy Cooper coming on and looking crazed or whatever it is, or Harry Hill, or, you know. And I also have a theory that the better a comedian you are, the more you divide people.
Mm-hmm.
In that, if you think of all the big names, there are a load of people who really like them, and there are a load of people who really don't like them.
Michael McIntyre is a good example.
Yeah, very good example. And if everyone doesn't like you, then you're no good. But the better you are, the more you will divide people, I think.
Yes. Very
and if everyone thinks you're okay, you're probably not very good.
Mm. When did you first realize of look at you had this sort of that you could look at words in this other way?
I think I've always done it.
Yeah?
I've always done it. Yes, yes. Just the sounds and the... and also I ended up doing one-liners because I was terrified when I first started. So you always have to get to the joke as quickly as possible.
Yes.
And therefore you end up with a lot of one-liners. Mm. So that's how... And then people know you for that. I think in terms of putting a show together, I'm good at making the jewels. I'm just not so good at making the crown to put them in. So...
I wouldn't agree, actually.
Well, it's harder to do the structure for me for some reason. Even doing a radio show or something, I have to have help with the structure. Otherwise, I can, you know, be given a subject and write you lots of jokes about that subject. But actually meshing it in with character and stuff is not my strong
point. And we just drifted a little bit from spirituality. Anything, do you feel that there's a service that you're doing, that there is a good thing that comes out of the comedy and people laughing, and that they, you think it's good for their spiritual health too, for people to laugh?
Yes. I mean, let's hope so. I recently did, turned up as a, there was a psychiatry conference, a medical conference, and I was wheeled in as light entertainment in the afternoon, to just do Q&A. And I started by saying, look, guys, if you mess up, you know, there were air ambulance people there and there were surgeons. I said, listen, if you guys mess up, it's a whole different league of me messing up. Mm. You know, I feel a bit like a pigeon at an airport because your level is so, you know, so much higher than mine. But I do think we provide a service. It's interesting that there aren't big comedy circuits in other European countries, for instance. But I think the British are so stiff in general. It's almost like they need to go to a prostitute, for want of a better word, to pay money to someone who will get that.
Get them to let go.
Yes, exactly. Exactly, same thing. So that's why, you know, British comedy is a thing.
And there's sometimes the edge of British comedy that I actually understand why, coming from South Africa as I do, and I don't find it initially funny, and I can see that a lot of English people do. For example, Tommy Cooper looks to me as if he's telling the same joke over and over, but I think to the English who's stiff, it might just be so liberating to see someone behave like this. Yeah.
Yes, and I think that when... With Tommy Cooper, with Tim Vine, do you know Tim Vine as well? Mm. Sometimes there's almost a hysterical edge to the laughter that is bigger than the joke, actually. You've actually touched someone on the inside that, you know, it's like you're massaging a part that's never been massaged before.
Mm.
And suddenly this weird noise comes out. And I think that often the laughter is higher pitched. And you get someone, something on a roll, and especially with lots of quick gags, people are actually laughing at a joke two or three back that they've just realised.
Last question. Do you have any tip for people, like anything for keeping in good mental, physical, spiritual shape? Anything you would want to leave as a little tip, Milton Jones tip of looking after yourself? See, this is the producer who gave me this question.
Yes, I think... Write lists and make the lists.
Make lists.
Make lists and make the lists longer than you can achieve.
Yes.
Because then you'll always have something to do tomorrow. Actually, that's not a good tip.
I think it is a good tip to make lists. Though. Do you always write something down if you think of it, or you think you'll remember it the next day if you had an insight? Or
I try to write it down. And because I'm better at remembering things than I used to be, if I do a tour show, it's 200 to 250 jokes, and I have to remember them in the right order.
Wow.
Because if I... There are a couple of places in tours where I have similar junctions. if I go down the wrong junction, that's the end of the show.
But your humour is high-intensity jokes. I mean, compared to Stuart Lee, who I also regard as a great comedian, he could talk for quite a long time, raconteur, telling you a story, a narrative, and there'll be a punchline eventually, but not for a while. Yeah.
But although what I'm doing is random, it isn't random in the sense of I've looked at the punchlines and you don't want similar ones next to each other.
Yeah, I do agree with you that when I saw Stephen Wright, funny, Arnold supported Stephen Wright, mm-hmm. I think it was the Hammersmith Odeon, and he said something about, before he went on, he says, you know, you're going to see a great genius tonight, Stephen Wright, so I'm just keeping myself contained a bit. I'm not going to give him the best, stage. Yeah. But I felt his humour was brilliant observation, but pretty random. It would move on, like, why is there only one Monopolies Commission? And then move on to something else. Yeah. And they were all funny, but it doesn't tie together. With yours, I saw a narrative which, as I said earlier, suspended my disbelief.
Yes, yes. And those little jokes that are either running jokes or, you know, occasionally I'll do a long list of jokes and then I say, right, I'm going to skip a bit now, and then I'll skip up and down the stage and then come back and start doing the jokes again. Those little jokes that are different or movement or, you know, are very valuable because they break things up.
Let me just pick you up on one thing, because I just remember it's a particular interest of Arnold Brown, our comedy consultant. He says there are different types of laughter, that there's a belly laugh, there's a deep laugh, and then you mentioned something about a higher up laughter. Can you say anything about laughter itself?
People assume that all laughter is good sometimes, but I've seen many people laugh in a cruel, nasty, bullying way.
Yes.
And if what I do works, it's more attached to joy than it is to nastiness. I know we've just done the Merseyside gag, but I think as much is to do with the spirit in which something is said. You know, that's why censorship is such a tricky issue, because I've heard a lot of people say nasty things, but they've done it with a twinkle in their eye, and you know from being there that they don't really mean that. They're just being slightly provocative. However, I've also heard people say things that aren't very quotable, but they've said it in such a nasty way, I don't want to be in the same room as them.
I couldn't agree with you more. This is profoundly my view about comedy and the work I do, provocative therapy. Context is absolutely everything. And the golden rule of provocative therapy, made by the founder of provocative therapy, was a very funny guy, and he suddenly realized if he incorporated his wisecracking into the therapy, he was getting incredible results in reverse psychology. But he eventually made a golden rule. And the golden rule incorporates something that you've just said. Only make, and use two words in the golden rule. In the last sentence you said, amazingly, the golden rule is only provoke someone if you do it with affection in the heart and a twinkle in the eye. Then you can say anything you like. A person will take anything. I've sat with people and done this, and they've taken everything, and someone 10 feet away have said, if you had said that to me, I would have been very upset. And I said, but I didn't say it to you. I said it to that person, you see. And that's, context is everything. I don't believe there's any word in any language that in the right context can't be used in comedy or anything else.
Absolutely. I agree.
Anyway, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you.
Likewise.
Very, very moving. Thank you very much.
Are You Feeling Funny is a Snipper Nixon production. The comedy consultant is the legendary Arnold Brown. The series producers are Luke and Alan Nixon, with music from George Montague, audio recorded by Alex Hollingsworth, and the series editor was Luke Nixon. But more importantly, the back-breaking vocal work you are hearing now is done by me, Olivia Nixon. You can find loads more stuff from us to listen to and read at snippernixon.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.